is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. The war between the Kremlin and Kyiv involving NATO resupply has come to a moment where there's a change in leadership in all directions, most especially in the United States. But then again, there's been a change of leadership in London. A change in leadership is expected in Berlin, and a change of leadership is implicit in Paris. These are several big players, all with weighty opinions about whether the war in Ukraine continues another year. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, because we've been talking for months about a war that is exhausted on both sides. The casualties continue, but the change of the battlefield does not. In addition, we've come to a moment now where they're throwing aerial objects at each other, drones or missiles, and this involves civilians in all directions, the infrastructure of Russia, certainly the infrastructure of what's left of Ukraine. And then there's talk of a ceasefire. There's talk of a settlement. There's talk of negotiation, especially from the Kremlin in the person of Vladimir Putin making his remarks at his annual press conference, saying he's ready to meet with Mr. Trump. He hasn't seen him or talked to him for 4 years. And from the Trump campaign and from lieutenants around Mr. Trump, that a deal is at hand. I believe the expectation was 24 hours during the campaign. Let's put that down to exaggeration. Anatole, is this substantive, what you see offered by Mr. Putin to meet with or talk to Mr. Trump and Mr. Trump's intention? Do either side have the goods to at least impose a ceasefire? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Well, I don't think that the Russians will agree to a ceasefire without a complete settlement, because by the way, the Ukrainians have also ruled that out, because both sides see that as simply, you know, allowing the other then to maneuver for greater advantage. But I do think, from what I can see, that the Russian side is perfectly willing to meet with the American side to begin peace negotiations. And if or when they do, we will then have to see which demands or proposals from each side are in fact, serious or non-negotiable, and which are not. Because some of the things demanded by the Russians, like complete Ukrainian withdrawal from the four provinces which Russia claims to have annexed, that's just not negotiable from Ukrainian or Western position. But equally, you've had these ideas that, if Ukraine accepts the loss of the territories that it's already lost, then it could, by way of compensation, get NATO membership, or at least a really big, possibly British-led Western peacekeeping, well, not just a force, but an army, basically. Well, those two points are totally unacceptable to Russia. That's not a basis for peace either. So, what has to be explored, and can really only be explored in talks, is basically just how far both sides are prepared to compromise.
The compromise must involve other decision makers, if I understand, because Ukraine doesn't have a future unless it's resupplied by the United States and by our NATO allies. I generalize, but not by much, to say there's no appetite in the European Union or NATO on the continent to continue this conflict. Germany is deeply troubled by its broken economy, or a said-to-be fragile economy. And Mr. Schulz was never all that committed to the Ukraine war to begin with. Britain is troubled as well for its domestic concerns. The United States is a major supplier. I believe the Biden administration has checked off more and more weaponry to flow, or money as well, in its last days. But Mr. Trump is not at this point indicating he'll continue that. So is the decision at hand now. We just don't see it on paper. If the Europeans won't go and the U.S. is reluctant, Kyiv is not in a position to negotiate. What leverage does it have?
Well, the leverage that it has, is that the Ukrainian army, although it's falling back, is falling back very slowly and inflicting huge casualties on the Russians. It's now very widely predicted by Russian establishment figures that Russia will face a huge problem of inflation this year, and to curb inflation, it will be necessary impose spending limits, which will limit Russia's military capability. Now, if Putin therefore wishes to continue the war, he will either have to go for an early complete breakthrough, which so far the Russian army has, since the first days, has never been able to achieve and may very well not be able to achieve, or he's going to have to impose much, much greater sacrifices and austerity on the Russian population and move from basically a volunteer army and a very well-paid one to mass conscription. Now, so far, he's been very unwilling to do that because he's obviously very afraid of Russian public opinion. Ukraine is by no means without, ability to influence the Russians, but only if it is, also prepared in the end to give up non-negotiable positions. And we just don't know whether the Zelensky government can or will do that.
Then we turn to the Russian opinion of NATO. There's been much talk for the last 3 years, that this is a war between the Russian Federation and its allies and NATO. Does that talk go away? Does it stop? Are we in a place, however, where we're launching a new Cold War after Ukraine is resolved in any fashion?
Well, I think that may very well be the case. But of course, there are so many, unknowns. So much will depend on U.S. relations with China. So much will depend on the course of European elections. If the populist right in Europe and parts of the populist left as well continue to rise at the rate that they have done, over the past decade, then you'll have a completely different political configuration in Europe in the end, and one which is, well, at the very least, much less committed to confrontation with Russia, and support for Ukraine will be just much more concentrated on issues like immigration and economic growth. So a huge amount remains open. One thing, though, to keep very much in mind is the huge gap between some of the language of present European governments and of NATO and A, their capacities, and B, the will of European populations to support it. Because when it comes to capacities, Britain is pushing this idea for a British-led, Western force in Ukraine. But Britain only has one brigade that it could contribute to such a force. I mean, this is not a serious commitment. And then when it comes to public will, majorities, big majorities all over Europe are against, anything that could lead to direct war with Russia. And the leader of the German conservative opposition, who is almost certainly to become chancellor after the German elections in February, Friedrich Merz, he has not explicitly ruled out German participation in a peacekeeping force, but he said that it will only happen if Russia agrees, and Russia will not agree. So that's that ruled out.
The comments by Mr. Trump then are persuasive only if you want to listen to them. One of the comments I was struck by these last days is the idea that the target for European budgets for defensive matters is 5%, not 3% any longer. Have you heard that as well? 5%, which exceeds my imagination of how they could do it.
They can't do it. It's just politically totally impossible. Now, it could be possible if the European Union as a whole could craft a military-industrial strategy, a bit like that of Russia, in which you would pour money into European military industries, thereby producing an industrial boom, creating lots of new jobs in military industry. But the thing is that the European military industries have become, A, so weak, and B, of course, they're fragmented on a national level. And Britain is not even in the European Union anymore. So to do this, over anything less than, a generation would mean, in fact, and I've no doubt that this is very present in Trump's mind, not producing things in Europe, but in fact buying them from the United States, buying weaponry from the United States. Well, that just will not fly with European publics.
Anatol Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We're dealing with Ukraine and Russia's conflict immediately, but there's a moving story in the whole of the Black Sea Basin. And when we come back, there's Moldova, there's Georgia, there's Turkey. This is there's Romania. This is a very troubled part of the planet that's not going to calm down easily just because the firing stopped, if it does stop. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.